The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Very much. Now, Solicitor Keith Walsh is with me now. He is our Monday expert this week. He specialises in family law and he is prepared to answer your questions about divorce, civil separation, domestic disputes. Because what prompted this is big money cases going to the High Court in divorce. How does it happen that the big money cases end up in the High Court? Is there a threshold, Keith?
There is a threshold. So you have to exceed 3 million euros in really in property, but sometimes it can, in, you know, can be money or shares or other things. So that's quite a lot of money for most people to have.
And would a pension fund go into that as well?
No, a pension fund would be excluded. So it's only kind of really kind of property mainly. So kind of buildings, apartments. But some cases that are more complex, maybe involving company shareholdings, trusts, things like that might go up. But the general rule is 3 million.
And what sort of money have we seen in these settlements?
We've seen very big money recently, probably over 10, 15, 20 million in a number of cases that have gone through the High Court. You know, so it seems like the accumulation of wealth, once people get over the 3 or 5 million, they kind of can make an awful lot of money from a variety of industries, not just tech, as people think. You know.
Now, it's a big adjudication then for the High Court. I presume you have all sorts of experts on both sides of the argument.
You'd have forensic accountants, probably pension experts. You may have child experts like psychologists. You may have company valuers. You certainly will have property valuers. You know, so there's a whole variety of people who become involved. And the whole idea is not to end up in the High Court and run the case. Probably certainly over 80 to 90% of our cases and most family law solicitors' cases would settle or resolve. Mediation is also used quite a bit in these bigger money cases because to run a case like that could be 5 or 7 or 8 days in the High Court. So you're talking there's a huge incentive to settle these cases.
Are those details then released to who the warring parties are?
No, it's covered by the in-camera rule, so there's a privacy rule, so you can't name the people. But if a case runs in the High Court, it's more likely there'll be a written judgment which kind of informs how other judges in the Circuit Court and other High Court judges would deal with the case. So the judgment will always be anonymised where the case runs. And really, it's when there's a point of law. But it helps in terms of how do you divide up assets, you know.
Now, 3 million is the threshold for the High Court. What about the Circuit Court?
The Circuit Court at the minute, it's really not to 3 million, maybe except where it's really complex. And but there are plans currently. There's a law introduced called the Family Courts Act, which was enacted in November of last year. And there's a plan in that to reduce the threshold of the Circuit Court. To increase the district court and to involve the district court, which is currently a court that's overburdened with cases, both criminal and civil, and where there's a huge increase in family law in the district court, which traditionally dealt with the non-marital family, dealt with childcare cases, dealt with domestic violence cases. And I suppose if you think that if there's 90 cases in the High Court, and that's the busiest they've been since, I think, 2000 in relation to family law, there's 25,000 domestic violence cases in the district court started every year. There's almost the same amount of childcare cases, which is, or 21,000 childcare cases, which is 50% up in a couple of years ago. The district court is the kind of workhorse, but it's really... it's really under-resourced.
So they're going to bring in divorce up to what threshold?
Up to 1 million
in
the district court. Which
it might be as kind of a moderate enough house in Dublin.
It would be, but I think FLAC have done a bit of research and they said it'll probably capture, I think, over 70 to 80% of most households in terms of if you don't have an investment property or a second property, you're likely to be in the district court. And I suppose the concerns are just the under-resourcing of it. Make sure that we're not making a system that works to a degree, and I'm not saying it's perfect, but that if it went to the district court, I think there's concerns, not just from lawyers, but from FLAC and from other civil society groups, that it may mean there are greater delays and the cases wouldn't be turned over as quick as they should be.
Now, the basic rules that we have for divorce here are somewhat different to the ones in the UK, for instance. I mean, I remember when we talked about this and the initial divorce jurisdiction, the idea was that people could always go back to the well. Have we reached the point of that final settlements are adjudicated?
Well, in theory, they can never be final. They can always be re-entered. But there's a number of Supreme Court and High Court decisions that really indicate that it's in extremely rare circumstances that you might go back to the well, which might be an extreme change in health if there's a very, very significant change.
But if you
lost
it all in Kempton Park, you can't go back to the well.
No, and there's a number of post-Celtic Tiger cases where people maybe got money and didn't invest it wisely, and they found it very difficult to go back and to get the money again from the person who may have, a bit like the man with the talents who buried them, it's hard to go back and maybe get the talents or the money for the second time.
Hmm. Now, the question then of how long you have to wait after a separation and what defines and describes that separation?
So you have to be living separate and apart for two of the previous 3 years to qualify to be able to apply or start your divorce. That was reduced in 2019 from 4 out of the last 5 years.
So it's 2 out of 3?
2 out of 3.
But living apart can be in the same house?
Yes, you can be living apart under the same roof, provided you're really socialising separately. People know that you're actually separated. Being in the same bed or in the same bedroom is problematic, I would have said, generally for that. But sometimes people live separately in the same
bedroom. Do you have situations, though, where one party claims we've been living apart and the other says, oh, no, we haven't? Do you remember there after we had a few jars?
Yeah, no. I mean, that does come up a bit, and that's human nature. And, I mean, issues maybe also arise where if you're living separate and apart, but you want to keep up appearances for the children in particular, and that you don't want the children necessarily to see you living apart. You go on holidays together, you socialise together. So it can be tricky, but generally it'll be sorted out.
Now, some of the questions coming in. Can a spouse be forced out of their home if they don't engage when the partner wants a divorce?
No, they can't. The only reason a person can be forced out of a family home or a house in which they've a property interest is if there's a barring order made, which is only grounded on domestic violence issues. At the end of a judicial separation or divorce, it's thought that the person has to leave, and it generally will be one of the orders that one of the people live in the house. So unfortunately, if your spouse isn't cooperating, then you have to go to court to start the process, because only when you start it will it come to an end. So that's unfortunate.
Here's one. Myself and my ex are legally court-approved separated. If one party wishes to divorce, who pays? And what if the party not seeking or wanting the formal divorce cannot afford it or doesn't want the cost? Who pays?
Well, the law generally in family law in the circuit court, which is probably where most of them take place, is that each person pays their own costs unless there's a really, really good reason that they shouldn't. This doesn't seem to have any reason why they wouldn't, unfortunately. So,
But how much cost would, if they're legally separated, presumably they've sorted out their affairs in the legal separation. I mean, would there be a lot of cost involved for the party who says, I'm happy to go along with divorce, but I'm not going to pay?
It depends. I suppose certainly there could be a minor cost in go to a solicitor and get some general advice about whether you should engage too much in this or whether a straightforward divorce would be enough. The kind of things that you should watch out for are, has the pension been dealt with in the separation? Because if you have a separation agreement, it probably won't be. If you need to get into the pension, that's a little bit more technical. In a lot of cases, though, there's a duplication between a separation and a divorce. And it's a pity that you have to be living 2 years apart. If you're living 1 year apart, instead of getting a separation and divorce, you might just go straight forward for a divorce. So I think the government should think about reducing the waiting time for a divorce so we wouldn't have this duplication and people would simply do it once and get divorced.
I am divorced. My ex-husband has stopped my maintenance by court order because he says I have remarried. I have not remarried. Please tell me what I must do.
Well, if you had remarried, your spousal maintenance, would your husband be entitled to stop it, but not the child maintenance? So it depends the type of maintenance. Mm. If someone breaches a court order, it's a straightforward process of attachment and committal. So there's a bit of a process that the person has to be served with the order, and you bring them before the court and the court then decides. But I mean, people aren't allowed to breach court orders, and there would be a sanction for that.
Now, what about someone who hasn't remarried but is effectively in a common law arrangement with a new partner, but because they swore I'll never get married again. But they end up in another relationship which is permanent. So you got the first person who's paying the maintenance and looking at
I mean, it seems
the lodger, shall we say, doing well out of the arrangement.
It seems unfair, but I mean, the court order is there until the person remarries or until one of the two of them passes away. what may happen then is it's usually the husband who pays spousal maintenance would say, well, look, in actual fact, the situation has changed since we got the maintenance, and my former wife is now actually being maintained by somebody else, and that should be taken into account. And then you have to bring an application to the court, but you can't simply stop paying maintenance. A judge would have to look at the whole thing and decide. But
he can't unilaterally decide. Even he's not happy with the new arrangement, shall we say, but he can't unilaterally do it himself.
No, a judge would have to decide.
I'm separated over 12 years, youngest child 17 and starting in fifth year. Second child is in their 20s, living at home and unemployed. My ex has not contributed to the mortgage since he left. I'm afraid if I apply for a divorce that he'll be entitled to half our home as he's now unemployed. There's still a mortgage on our home and I wouldn't be able to afford a new home. Even though I am working, I'm in my mid-50s. Any advice would be appreciated.
Well, I suppose, first of all, maybe consider applying for legal aid. If you're under a certain income threshold, you'd be entitled to it. Second of all, really, in relation to divorce and how a court has to decide what happens, in the Constitution it says that a judge has to make sure there's proper provision for both sides. That's for the husband and the wife and the children. As you're the person who's in the house probably maintaining the children on your own and trying to pay the mortgage on your own, I would hope it's unlikely the house would be sold until such time as the children were no longer dependent, or certainly to a more advanced age than they currently are. But because your husband is unemployed, that means that he also has to be taken into account. So you're right to be concerned.
If marriage was done in another country, but the couple have been living in Ireland for 20 plus years, do Irish divorce laws apply?
Yes, they can apply, but there's a kind of race to issue first. So if it's an EU country, the rule is whoever starts the case in that country can get jurisdiction. And that's a slightly more complex one. I wouldn't hang around if, for example, if you're a French citizen and you think you might do better in France, you probably would try there if you're entitled to, or if you're Irish and you think you'll do better here, you know.
A final one, looking for advice. My son's dad is an alcoholic and an addict. Despite a couple of attempts at rehab, he cannot get clean. Can I decide just to cut him out now? My son is really struggling and heartbroken. His dad won't get better. He is his guardian. Can this even be removed? I dread if something happens to me and my son ends up in his care. My son is just 8. We don't live with his dad and we never married.
He's not automatically a guardian if you never married. If you married, it'd be a different situation. If he has got guardianship, you may be able to apply to court and get various directions. You should immediately make a will and appoint a testamentary guardian who would be somebody else apart from your husband. And that's the most urgent thing that you should do immediately.
Keith Walsh, family law solicitor. Keith, thank you very much for joining us. And that's all we have time for.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.